This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn, and it's time for Pope Pope Parliament, where we take you through the highlights from the Day One Rakyat. So today's session started off quite fiery after Minister in the Prime Minister's Department for Parliament and Law, Datuk Sri Wan Junaidi Tuanku Jaafar, said that Putrajaya will challenge any attempts to enforce the 62 billion ringgit final award by a Spanish arbitrator to the Sulu Sultanate's purported descendants. So Junaidi said that the award was illegitimate and that the proceedings were invalid. However, MPs from Sabah insisted that the government should take stronger action to protect the state. So here's that exchange between Kota Belud MP Isna Raisa Munira Majlis and the minister.
Persoalannya sekarang ini bukan kita iktiraf atau kita tidak iktiraf. Kita tetap tidak iktiraf. Masalahnya sekarang ini there is an order from Mahkamah Arbitrasi Perancis untuk Kerajaan Persekutuan bayar waris Sultan Sulu yang mana kita juga adalah signatory kepada convention ini. Kita cakap pasal sovereignty immunity. Soalan saya, kenapa Mahkamah Arbitrasi Perancis sekarang ini memihak kepada penuntut? Malaysia kena buat laporan polis untuk mengesahkan bahawa there is a complot Dr. Stampa dengan waris Sultan Sulu. We should apply to set aside this stupid order. Tuan Speaker, saya minta maaf tapi I'm so disappointed you rejected my motion, Tuan Speaker. Siapa basabah di mata Kerajaan Persekutuan sekarang ini? Are we not important? Sekarang ini Malaysia, Kerajaan Persekutuan Malaysia yang disuruh bayar ini. And it's a big amount.
Terima kasih Tan Sri, betul. Sebenarnya sudah dijawab. Saya kata tadi bahawa tindakan yang diambil oleh kerajaan sekarang telah membatal pun pelantikan Stampa sebagai arbitrator. Sebenarnya bukan mahkamah memberi arahan Tan Sri, betul. Biar saya perbetulkan. Yeah. It's not the mahkamah. It is the arbitrator yang memberi itu. Yang telah dibatalkan oleh mahkamah pelantikan dia dan award dia pun telah dibatalkan oleh Mahkamah Madrid. Maknanya Kerajaan Malaysia telah buat yang terbaik dan kita dah mencapai matlamat kita untuk membatalkannya. Terima kasih.
Sebab itu Malaysia kena ambil tindakan yang tegas ini. Saya minta Tuan Speaker, kita bahas ini soal bukan soal sekolah daif, ini bukan soal parit tersumbat ke, ini bukan soal ini. Ini soal kedaulatan negara.
Yang Amat, tolong duduk.
So that was Kota Belud MP Isna Raisa Munira Majlis. You also heard Dewan Rakyat Speaker Tan Sri Azhar Harun, who continued to say that really it's quite a complex legal issue.
Saya rasa telah dijawab. Saya sebagai peguam, saya faham apa yang dijawab tu. Saya juga sebagai peguam sebenarnya faham kenapa kita tidak mengambil bahagian dalam tu, tapi bukan fungsi saya lah untuk explain. Perkara ni, maaf, in English, quite difficult to understand lah. It's a very fine area of the law. Conflict of law ni. Tapi kalau boleh ambil pandangan undang-undang yang betul-betul memahami apa yang YB Menteri cakap tu, saya rasa YB semua akan faham apa yang diperkatakan. Quite difficult to understand actually. I don't blame you. Sorry.
So that was Dewan Rakyat Speaker Tan Sri Azhar Harun. You know, let us know if you've been able to follow the twists and turns of this story. I will say that our inside story last week on this issue did help me at least kind of understand the story a bit better. But it is indeed a very complex issue. You can let us know. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on to a question by Bukit Bendera MP Wong Hon Wai about petrol and subsidy programs to counter the sharp increases in international prices for crude oil and natural gas brought on by the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So Finance Minister Datuk Sri Tengku Zafrul Aziz explained that the effect that the oil price hikes will have on the amount of subsidies that the government is paying.
Ditambah pula dengan isu pergolakan antara Rusia dan Ukraine, harga minyak mentah dunia telah naik mendadak ke paras melebihi $100 setong, iaitu paras tertinggi sejak 2014. Dengan kenaikan ini, dijangka jumlah subsidi petrol, diesel dan LPG akan melebihi 2.5 bilion ringgit sebulan. Sekiranya harga minyak mentah dunia kekal melebihi $100 setong, jumlah subsidi tersebut bagi keseluruhan tahun 2022 dijangka mencecah 28 bilion ringgit berbanding 11 bilion ringgit bagi tahun 2021. Pengguna pada masa ini hanya membayar RM2.05 seliter untuk petrol RON 95. Tetapi kos sebenar dalam bulan Mac telah mencecah RM3.70 seliter untuk petrol. Ini bermakna kerajaan terpaksa menampung perbezaan sebanyak RM1.65 setiap liter. Sebagai contoh, setiap kali kita pergi stesen pam minyak dan kita mengisi minyak dengan nilai RM100 atau kira-kira 49 liter dan kita mengisi minyak dengan nilai RM100 yang tadilah 49 liter, jumlah yang dibayar oleh kerajaan adalah sebanyak RM81 kerana jumlah kos sebenar berdasarkan harga pasaran adalah RM181 bagi 49 liter RON 95. Ini bermaksud subsidi kerajaan adalah sehingga 45% daripada jumlah keseluruhan yang perlu dibayar. Bagi diesel pula, pengguna hanya membayar RM2.15 seliter di stesen minyak, sementara kos sebenar telah melebihi RM4 seliter.
Zafrul also said that since subsidies have been applied across the board and therefore have been more beneficial to higher income earners, the ministry will look into targeted subsidies that can better help those who need it while maximising efficiency on government spending.
Program subsidi semasa melibatkan harga bersubsidi yang sama dinikmati semua tanpa mengira kaya atau miskin. Tambahan pula, golongan yang berpendapatan tinggi akan menikmati lebih subsidi berdasarkan tahap penggunaan yang lebih besar berbanding dengan mereka yang berpendapatan rendah. Dengan itu, kerajaan akan mengkaji semula mekanisme subsidi produk minyak supaya dapat dilaksanakan dengan lebih bersasar dan menumpukan bantuan dan subsidi kepada golongan rentan dan mereka yang benar-benar memerlukan bantuan. Pelaksanaan subsidi secara bersasar dijangka dapat mengoptimumkan sumber kewangan kerajaan dan penjimatan yang dicapai dapat diagihkan semula untuk program yang lebih berkesan menyumbang kepada kesejahteraan rakyat. Sekian, terima kasih.
That was Finance Minister Datuk Sri Tengku Zafrul Aziz. Let us know what you think. Are you in support of targeted subsidies? And would you be willing to pay more if it means subsidies for those who need it? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This issue of the rising cost of goods and commodities is something that we will be looking into with more depth on Inside Story later.
Now, moving on to COVID-19 test kits, Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister Dato' Sri Alexander Nantalingi was asked whether the ceiling price for test kits is going to be reviewed. According to Rasah MP Chia Ki Chin, kits were available from as low as RM5 back in January, but the prices increased in February. Here's the minister.
Kerajaan sedang meneliti keperluan mengkaji semula harga ceiling atau harga maksimum untuk kit ujian pantas antigen COVID-19. Harga maksimum kit ujian ini telah ditetapkan pada ringgit Malaysia 19.90 sen di peringkat runcit dan RM16 di peringkat borong di bawah Akta Kawalan Harga dan Anti Pencatutan 2011. Dari aspek keberadaan bekalan di pasaran, kerajaan telah meratakan kit ujian pantas antigen COVID-19 ujian sendiri ini sebagai barang kawalan di bawah Perintah Kawalan Bekalan Barang-Barang Kawalan No. 6 kurungan 2021 pada 24 November pada 2021 yang lalu dan telah dikuatkuasakan pada 1 Disember tahun 2021.
Then in a follow-up question, Tumpat MP Che Abdullah Mat Nawawi questioned the accuracy of home test kits and talked about his experience of negative readings despite eventually testing positive on a PCR test. So Alexander shared that he had experienced the same thing and even tested positive on a PCR 3 weeks after initially getting COVID.
Memang kita difahamkan berbanding dengan PCR test, saliva test ni memang kurang tepat. Saya sendiri baru-baru ini, saya kena positif pada awal Februari. Masuk 7 hari di hospital di Sungai Buloh. Bila keluar, okey. Dan saya diluluskan sebagai tidak akan menjangkiti orang lain. Tapi selepas 3 minggu, sebelum Parlimen bersidang, arahan daripada Parlimen, kesemua mesti melalui ujian PCR. Jadi saya pergi, dapat positif. Tapi saya diberitahu kemudian, memang begitu. Sebab virus tu walaupun dia tak lagi kuat untuk menjangkiti orang lain, akan kekal dalam seseorang tu selama sampai 90 hari. Saya difahamkan.
That was Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister Dato' Sri Alexander Nantalingi, who also highlighted that the issue of test accuracy should be something that the Health Ministry should weigh in on. Let us know. Have this sort of conversation about whether these tests, the home tests, are reliable or not, has it put you off doing your own home testing? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
And now an update on long-term measures being taken to address flash floods. The Minister of Environment and Water, Dato' Sri Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man, says that they are installing early warning systems and implementing a flood disaster risk assessment based on climate change projections that is expected to be completed in 2024.
Untuk makluman yang berhormat, Kementerian sedang melaksanakan penilaian risiko bencana banjir berdasarkan unjuran perubahan iklim melalui inisiatif peta hazard banjir dan peta risiko banjir. Hebahan maklumat cuaca dan banjir serta amaran awal kepada pasukan penyelamat akan ditambah baik dengan segera, dan penyelarasan bersama dengan pengantaruh akan dipertingkatkan. Untuk makluman Dewan Yang Mulia, di bawah Rancangan Malaysia ke-11 dan Rancangan Malaysia ke-12, MAK Malaysia sedang memasang telah pun siap masa 8 buah stesen radar baru ini untuk tambahan di Perak, Kelantan, Terengganu, Pahang, Sabah dan Sarawak. Ia adalah sebagai tambahan kepada 11 buah sistem radar sedia ada yang dijangka siap sepenuhnya pada tahun 2022. Selain pada itu, JPS juga telah melaksanakan program ramalan dan amaran banjir yang bertujuan memberi amaran awal kepada agensi berkaitan dengan pengurusan bencana dan orang awam. Siren akan dibunyikan apabila aras air melepasi nilai ambang tertentu untuk memberi amaran awal kepada penduduk setempat. Ramalan banjir seawal 7 hari dan amaran seawal 2 hari juga disediakan bagi lokasi-lokasi yang dijangka banjir. Setakat ini, sistem ini telah pun beroperasi di lembangan Sungai Pahang, Kelantan, Terengganu dengan ketepatan 65%. Dan kita juga sedang naik taraf beberapa sistem amaran di bawah Peraban bagi negeri-negeri lain di seluruh negara.
Kepung MP Lim Lip Eng then asked the minister how he expected flood management in the country to improve if he couldn't even manage floods in his own state. Here is that exchange.
Bagaimana Yang Berhormat Menteri boleh menyelesai masalah banjir di seluruh negara, sedangkan negeri Kelantan Menteri sendiri dilanda masalah banjir berkali-kali bertahun-tahun tanpa penyelesaian? Terima kasih.
Saya harap Kepung mengikuti jawapan saya dalam parlimen. Jangan ponting. Saya telah jelaskan bahawa kita punya perancangan jangka pendek, jangka sederhana, jangka panjang untuk masalah-masalah banjir. Sebab itu, kerajaan memperuntukkan satu jumlah yang sangat besar. Saya nak maklumkan bahawa Kabinet telah memutuskan 15 bilion menjelang tahun 2030 bagi menyelesaikan masalah banjir. Dan termasuklah apa yang akan berlaku di Kelantan. Saya harap soalan ini, berikut ini ada soalan berhubung dengan penyelesaian banjir di Kelantan. Saya harap Yang Berhormat tunggu. Terima kasih.
So that was the Minister of Environment and Water, Dato' Sri Tuan Ibrahim Tuan Man.
Now, during the debate of the Agong's Royal Address, Kuantan MP Fuzia Saleh once again raised the issue of radioactive waste generated by Lynas. So last year, it was announced that Lynas had obtained approvals from the local authorities to build a permanent disposal facility for toxic waste in Gebeng, Kuantan. However, Fuzia contested this decision and pointed out inconsistencies in the research as well as the approval process. And Fuzia wondered if approval had been given only because there's already 1 million metric tons of toxic waste currently in Gebeng.
Kita masih ada 1 juta metric ton. 1 juta metric ton sisa radioaktif tu yang berada di Gebeng. Di sebelah kilang. Yang tapak yang lain tu semua tak boleh pakai. Ditolak oleh EIA. Bukit Ketam ditolak. Dan tak jumpa lagi tapak lain. Jadi seolah-olah nak buat macam mana? Benda ni dah ada kat sini. Jadi maka semua tutup mata dan kata, okey bolehlah. Tutup mata lah, nak buat macam mana? Takkanlah rakyat, anak, cucu kita, generasi masa depan terpaksa terima kesilapan yang lampau? Takkanlah kita boleh jawab kepada anak cucu kita bagaimana kita nak uruskan sisa radioaktif ini? Tuan Yang Dipertua, ini yang saya tak faham. Kenapa kita sanggup langgar undang-undang? Kenapa kita sanggup tutup mata dan jawab soalan dengan cara yang main-main?
That was Kuantan MP Fuzia Saleh, who went on to criticise Malaysia's move to categorise that toxic waste as very low-level waste, as opposed to Australia's categorisation of it as low-level waste.
Now, finally, we have Kanga MP Nor Amin Ahmad saying that parliamentarians should not hold positions outside of the legislative branch, for example, GLCs or government-linked investment companies. He also thinks that cabinet members should not receive pensions on top of what they'll already be receiving as legislative members.
Kiranya boleh, kita perlulah hadkan pelantikan anggota kabinet dan juga agensi kerajaan. Pelantikan ya, sebagai dalam GLC dan dalam GLIC, kita boleh memperkemaskan sistem pelantikan dan bukanlah mengambil lantikan ini. Bagi saya, tidak sepatutnya ahli-ahli parlimen memegang ataupun mengambil jawatan-jawatan yang di luar cabang legislatif. Yang kedua, semua anggota legislatif yang dilantik ke jawatan kabinet tidak sepatutnya dibayar pencen kerana mereka pun sudah menerima pencen sebagai anggota legislatif. Cukuplah bagi anggota kabinet ini hanya menerima gratuiti secara one-off.
That was Kanga MP Nor Amin Ahmad. And that's it for this week's sitting of Dewan Rakyat. Here's what we looked at today. We talked about the fact that Putrajaya announced that they don't recognise the final award and legal proceedings requiring the government to pay 65 billion ringgit to the alleged Sulu Sultanate descendants. That's really quite a mouthful to say. We also talked about targeted subsidies for petrol and oil, as well as reviewing the ceiling price for COVID test kits and new long-term measures to manage flooding in the country. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It is just coming up to 5:24. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And quite a meaty parliamentary session to close off the week, with a number of issues coming up. I was particularly interested in that last point that we raised on parliamentarians holding positions in GLCs. But if you'd like to weigh in on any of the subjects discussed, keep sending those thoughts in. We've got a number already. That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I think that this is something that really should be paid more attention to, and particularly that point on pensions, which I don't think it's going to be a very popular motion to put forward.
No. Also, is this going to be extended to senators, for example? Because, you know, we do also see that pathway towards becoming politicians, right? Not necessarily through holding office in that traditional sense. But I love the fact that this is a suggestion that's coming from a parliamentarian about parliamentarians, because otherwise it's more often that you will hear these calls, right, for GLCs in particular, for pensions to be looked at, for additional allowances, things like that to be considered. You hear that more often from people who aren't actually doing the job. That's just the way it is. You know, people who are doing the job are going to say, well, we work hard. So I think hearing this suggestion being put forth so firmly and clearly is very interesting.
It also goes back to something that comes up quite often, right? The notion of politicians or MPs and what exactly their job is or what exactly their roles are, and how they're compensated for these. So I think drawing that line between compensation that they get for the job that they're doing as MPs or as representatives versus compensation that they might get, for instance, pension for holding other positions, that's a very important line to draw, because conflict of interest, if nothing else.
If nothing else, and yet that is such a huge else, you know, this whole concept of conflict of interest when we're talking about the nexus between business and politics is so huge. And so this is definitely one way to look at it. And yeah, I mean, also goes back to asset declaration, right, which I feel like we're not done even trying to resolve yet.
Let us know what you think. What do you make of this suggestion that parliamentarians shouldn't hold positions in GLCs, and as well as the fact that they shouldn't receive, cabinet members shouldn't receive pensions on top of what they're already receiving? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on the other issues that were brought up, we have some thoughts.
Yes. So let's look at fuel, specifically the conversation about how our subsidy amount may have to increase quite a bit if oil prices continue to go as they are. Again, this is something we'll be talking about a little bit more later. But there are conversations now about trying to come up with a more targeted form of subsidy, right? So that it's not like a blanket thing for everybody. And we have this from Shah Siddiq, who says, the targeted subsidy is good, timely and fair, as the rich, i.e. the BFM crowds, Bentleys, Ferraris and Maseratis, are the main beneficiaries, whilst the lower income use much less fuel in Myvees and Kapchais.
This question of the targeted subsidy, and this is a point that gets made all the time, right, that the people who often seem to benefit the most from a lot of subsidies are not the ones who might need them the most. And then this eats into what the government is able to do in a larger scale. So I think implemented properly, a targeted subsidy can be really effective. But implementation, again, as with many things.
I just wanted to say also that it is the same people who benefit who will then go and whinge about, but who will then go and complain about wastage. You know, it's the same people who are debating the wastage of subsidies when they are in fact benefiting from it. And just something about that, particularly in this comparison, because even if we're not talking about the cost of the cars, if we're merely talking about the size of the tanks alone, you know, I think it just tells you a lot.
Keep those thoughts coming if you'd like to weigh in on the idea of targeted subsidies, or if you have thoughts on cabinet members, politicians holding, well, parliamentarians rather, holding positions in GLCs and, more importantly, receiving pension from them. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.